the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hey, happy Earth Day. Learn how you can fight global climate change. Remember, you've got the whole world in your hands.
I know, isn't it fabulous? All refreshing and bubbly down to its soapy, spicy core.
What are you talking about? I want to tell you how to help protect our environment from global warming and...
I know, which is why I just got this awesome global warming soap from Bubble Genius.
Soap? So, you're gonna wash away global climate change?
Well, kinda. This soap is the coolest. It's called You've Got the Whole World in Your Hands, and it's a 3D rendering of the Earth, all in soap. First the land melts away, then the oceans disappear, and then you're left with a cinnamony core.
But how does that actually help anything?
Well, it's handmade in the U.S. with a pure vegetable base and ingredients sourced as close to home as possible, which supports local economies and reduces fossil fuel consumption. Plus, it's packaged in recyclable materials. And these Bubble Geniuses give a third of their profit on this soap to people fighting global warming. So, yeah, I guess I am washing away global climate change.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize how much we really do have the whole world in our hands.
You bet your bubbles we do.
You've got the whole world in your hands with You've Got the Whole World in Your Hands Global Warming Soap, only from the mad minds at Bubble Genius.
No polar bears were harmed in the making of the soap. Soap is not to scale.
BubbleGenius.com.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
We're both part of the same hypocrisy, but never think it applies to my family.
All right. Some people have to play little games. You play yours. So let's just say that you'll pay me because it's in your interest to pay me. But I want your answer in the money by noon tomorrow. And one more thing. Don't you contact me again, ever. From now on, you deal with Turnbull.
Open that door, sir.
Senator, you can have my answer now if you like. My offer is this. Nothing. Not even the fee for the gaming license, which I would appreciate if you would put up personally.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Educate. Syncopate. Radio communicate. Radio. The sound of year-round pleasure.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Wednesday, April 10th, 2013, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez.
Yes.
Brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. Wash your butt with the earth.
Wow, okay.
I love, you know,
just like the old days.
Yeah, yeah. Love that commercial for the Earth Day soap, and of course it's a great cause. Because I'm 12 years old, I go instantly to I'm washing my butt with the earth. But it is the best damn soap in the universe, so go to BubbleGenius.com and purchase all your soap. We're also brought to you by FullStrength.com and the BobSeska.com Amazon link. It's a link right there under the logo. You see it? It's a big capital letters, Amazon link.
And what happens? Can I just pull something out of my ass that we can be sponsored by next week?
Sure.
Okay, cool. I'm just going to come up with something.
Okay, just make something up.
Like a non-profit that I'm starting that basically goes only to me.
Well, you can always say, you know, we're also sponsored by Dead Star Twilight.
Oh, that's right. I guess we can. Yeah. My book.
Yeah.
Chez's book. You know, I got to write something else at some point.
Yeah, like an update to it. I mean, isn't that the advantage?
Well, I already plan on writing a prequel at some point, you know, because I describe so much in the book about, like, stuff that happened before. But it's just, God, I mean, my memories, like, coming right out of that period were pretty dim, so.
You have to write sort of the update epilogue or something like that, where you have the good news.
I genuinely, for those who do want the book, Dead Star Twilight, it's kind of a memoirish thing that I wrote about my time covering 9/11 and going through rehab and a lot of the fun stuff. I re-put it out there on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and I published like a little, like, there's a thing in the back, sort of a little update on like where are they now for all the people who, you know, obviously really existed in the book.
That's too cool. And it's you seriously did write a memoir. We're not joking about that. It's a real point.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not, you know, my life isn't that interesting. It's not like a memoir, like, oh, you know, I was born a poor black child. It's, you know, it's like it's just a year and a half period when everything fell apart in L.A. And I was living out here and working in TV news, and I was doing lots of heroin, and everything fell apart, and I got into rehab. And when I got out, 9/11 happened, and I wound up working in New York for NBC trying to recover from drugs.
So it's like a riches to rags to heroin to riches.
It's like riches to rags to, like, you know, well, at least I'm trying to get my bearings again kind of story.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's a great the last several years are, to me, probably the most interesting because of that rise from your separation and the road trips and then arriving and then, you know, meeting a new woman and all this stuff, getting set up in L.A. again. I mean, it's great.
That's one of the things that I'm, you know, without going into too much detail since we got a show to do. But yeah, that's one of the things that I that you know, the blog has really sort of acted as my post, you know, post Dead Star Twilight tale of what my life's been like, which included, yeah, the breakup with, you know, with Jane, which was just devastating. And, you know, she hates it when I talk about that. She hates it when I talk about that or when I write about it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, she does not like my saying anything at all about our marriage.
So which, how exactly do you buy the book? Where do you go to get the book?
Oh, the book is the book you can pick up at Amazon.com, but also if you really want it, it is available as a download for Kindle and, you know, Apple and all that other crap. It's available as a download at deusexmalcontent.com, D-E-U-S-E-X, malcontent, one word. .com, which is my website, and it's basically, since it's been out for a couple of years, and I just want people to read it, it's pay what you want. So there's a little thing where you can donate, and if you think it's an amazing book and you want to give me $20, terrific. If you think it sucks, then you don't have to give me anything. If you just think, hey, you know what, all right, I want to kick him a couple bucks, then you can, you know, throw me $5.
There you go.
It's available.
Yeah. Yep. See, now we're also sponsored by Dead Star Twilight.
Yay. Excellent. Good. It all worked out.
But if you want to go to Amazon, here's the great, if you want to go to Amazon,
that's right. Go to
buy
Amazon.
Dead Star Twilight, you hit the Amazon link at bobzeska.com, and it takes you right to the Amazon site, like right to the front page, and then everything
it all comes full circle.
That's right. So Jez gets a piece and I get a piece. Isn't that the way it works? Speaking of finances, the president released his budget today, and I want to spend a little bit of time on this because it's there's a frustrating aspect of it, and let it be known that this is one of the reasons why I absolutely cannot be considered an Obama bot.
Yeah, you went off on him this week.
Yeah, because it's a stupid idea. And I'm talking about chained CPI. Now, of course, I say chained CPI, and everyone's eyes glaze over.
I have to admit that I got about, you know, I read the whole piece you wrote for Banter on chain CPI and so, you know, the Social Security and all that. But yeah, I mean, I admit I should care, but yeah, you start talking stuff like that. And as Matt Taibbi says, one of the ways that Wall Street gets away with the kind of crap it gets away with is they count on people not understanding what they're talking about and not caring.
Oh, exactly. I mean,
and I'm the first one to say, I glaze over.
Even the regulators, I mean, they were like, oh, what the hell are these guys doing with all of this paper? Yeah, I mean, that's why we ended up in part of the reasons why we ended up in the recession, because they were just doing so many weird tricks and under the table things that not even.
Yeah, you just figured they know what they're doing and they know what they're talking about.
But so, I mean, with chain CPI, it's a way to get Social Security benefit cuts without saying they're benefit cuts. But everyone knows they're benefit cuts. And I think if you're a senior citizen, if you're on Social Security or about to go on Social Security, this kind of matters. Because what it is it's a new way of calculating cost of living adjustments. That is, Social Security benefits are routinely hiked by a few percentage points each year based on inflation. These are cost of living adjustments. Lately, though, they've been scarce in more than a little week, but adjustments based on chain CPI would be even weaker because the government would presume that as retail sales prices increase with inflation, seniors will substitute lower cost items. You say, well, these organic eggs are too expensive, so I'm just going to get regular eggs. Well, the government is going to adjust benefits based on buying the cheaper eggs assuming that people will buy the cheaper eggs. In other words, the government currently calculates benefits based on inflation, but with chain CPI, the government would calculate benefits based on assumed consumer reaction to inflation, which is buying cheaper stuff. Consequently, Social Security benefits would be reduced to follow this assumption, and that amounts to a cut. And that's part of the Obama plan, a plan which none of the Republicans are going to go along with.
Of course not.
This is a concession to the Republicans, and the Republicans will never, ever approve. So what's the point of it? I get a lot of people who kind of disagreed with me, including Ashby and all kinds of people on my Facebook page and at the Daily Banter and on the blog, saying, well, this is the president trying to be the grown-up in the room. This is the president trying to be the compromiser and trying to make the Republicans...
It gets nobody anywhere.
It doesn't. I mean, they call it the third rail in politics for a reason. Because as soon as it seems like you're going to cut benefits, everyone lines up against it. It's just a bad idea. No one wants benefits to be cut, especially when there are numerous ways to help Social Security remain solvent. And first of all, what we know is that Social Security will be solvent and, in fact, run a surplus for the next two decades. The next 20 years, Social Security is fine and dandy. If they do nothing, Social Security will be fine for the next two decades.
But you got to watch this past week on Real Time, watch Moore and Bernie Sanders go at each other.
Oh, yeah, really?
Oh, it was a beautiful thing, yeah.
I mean, Michael Moore and Bernie Sanders fought.
No, Steve Moore from...
Steve Moore. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Steve Moore, basically
saying that, you know, just doing the usual talking point, the usual article of faith that Social Security is like seconds away from going broke.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie Sanders is basically saying exactly what you're saying. And I mean, honestly, so is everyone else on the panel. And it's just fun to watch Steve Moore, just that smug prick that he is, you know, just no, not true.
Yeah. No, he's terrible. He's one of those sort of severe wing nuts who appears on Fox News Channel all the time. And I remember I did see one clip of him trying to say that, the president has increased the deficit and, you know, just all these ridiculous lies, not caring about what happened in the prior administration, just only concerned with what the president's doing now with regards to the deficit and the debt.
Right.
Completely and utterly frustrating. But what they do is they use this all as a reason to concern troll the Social Security problem. And there is no Social Security problem, at least not for the next 20 years. I mean, they could literally do nothing and it would be fine. And then after that, they could still pay out 75 to 80% of the benefits, which is still an increase to where they are now. It's about the same as where they are now, factored for inflation. So, and that's, again, that's if they do nothing, and they will do something. Now, on the other hand, the hysteria around chain CPI is admittedly a little bit overblown, considering that it will never pass. The fixes to Social Security will occur quietly and outside of the public hoopla. That's the way it always happens. And so what they'll probably do is they'll probably raise the payroll tax a little bit, or they'll increase the income salary cap for the payroll tax, which is the two of the sensible things to do. I mean, raising the payroll tax by half a percentage point or a full percentage point is not going to make or break anybody. It's not really going to hurt anybody, especially when you consider that it will eliminate the need to cut benefits, whether it's with chain CPI or a direct benefits cut, neither of which is actually going to happen again.
Right.
So what they ought to do is they ought to eliminate that income cap on the payroll tax and just get rid of it, or raise it up. You know, if they want to do a nice round number, increase the cap up to 200. Right now it's at 113,000. So income up to $113,000 gets taxed by the payroll tax, and Social Security benefit or Social Security is taken out of your paycheck up to $113,000. What they ought to do is raise that up to $200,000. I think they actually should start it at $200,000. Income at $200,000 and over would be taxed,
right.
Payroll tax. But that's crazy. That's crazy socialism talk. I love taxes. I love lots of big paying taxes. So, but I mean, this is
you're just a socialist.
I'm a socialist. I'm a tax and spend liberal.
Tax and spend liberal. You're anti-capitalist.
But this, so it just doesn't make sense for the president to, there's no, what is the upside for the president to propose change CPI? And when has it ever benefited a president to cut benefits? I mean, I'm speaking specifically about politics. When does a president get a bump? Has the president ever, regardless of who which president it is, what has he ever received a bump in approval ratings for wanting to cut benefits? Never. Never. I don't care what the other side is doing, what kind of grab ass they're playing. It never helps the president. Always hurts. You start meddling with Social Security in public, it's always going to damage you. George W. Bush's second term was irrevocably dinged by the fact that he came right out of the chute, spent that entire summer of 2005 trying to privatize Social Security. And his, you know, his second
term. And as we know, that was his only problem.
That was his only. Well, he had lots of other problems. But, I mean, politically, he spent all of his capital making a pitch for private whatever capital he had. He insisted that he had capital.
He did. He insisted. Well, you know, it's one of those things where if you say something often enough.
Yeah, that's true. But he didn't. I mean, he wasted it all trying to privatize Social Security, and it was a big mistake. So, anyway, so this is a big mistake. Plus, there were some other things going on in the budget that we'll get to after the break. But, I mean, you know. Paul Ryan, and that's why I played the Godfather Part 2 clip at the beginning of the show. Paul Ryan offering nothing in exchange. No concessions whatsoever.
Right. Well, that's why. Just I don't understand why Obama even bothers. Just at all. That's the thing that I can't. And I know I'm not the only one. I can't get my head around that. Why? Why bother?
Yeah.
Do whatever the hell you want. You're going to get yelled at for it anyway.
Well, I know the reason why he did it. And I'm going to get to that right after a quick break. Back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
In the days when out on the streets of a runaway American dream.
See, there are a bunch of people in Washington and on cable news who think that it's the sign of a very serious person to insist that Social Security is doomed. Social Security is insolvent. It's going bankrupt. That's what the Washington Post editorial board is one of them. The Morning Joe people, those guys all think that Social Security is doomed. So therefore, the serious thing to do is to make the hard choices, like cutting benefits. When in fact, the hard choice would be to do something reasonable that might not entirely pass, like raising taxes. I mean, let's face it, nothing is going to pass with the current House of Representatives. Nothing the president decides to do is going to solve anything. The only thing that if the president wants to achieve anything in his second term, it's going to require a Democratic House beginning in, you know, with the election of 2014, the midterm.
Yeah.
Short of that, nothing's going to occur. And that leads us then to this gun control bill in the Senate. They came up with the deal today to get background checks in there, which I was glad to see. You know, it is a positive development, at least one step closer to having a vote. Whether or not the vote is successful, ultimately leading to the passage of this legislation, is another story entirely. Mm. But Pat Toomey, a Republican, and Joe Manchin, who's basically a Republican, but he's a Democrat from West Virginia. They came up with an agreement on an amendment about the personal transfer of weapons between individuals. And it's sort of an exception carved out into the background check law. Now, what this does is the background check law would have forced people to do background checks even if they were selling guns person to person. But now they've carved out this exception. And so that's I guess it's okay. I don't know, but I mean, I'm sure there'll be some sort of yard sale loophole for buying assault weapons or I don't know what. But they're closing the gun show loophole, and I guess that's good. But now they'll probably come up with some way, some sort of end around.
You can sell guns via a show or yard sale as long as Ted Nugent is playing while you're selling.
Right.
If there's a Ted Nugent song playing,
yeah,
then you can sell.
But I mean, I was reading through this piece here on the Huffington Post about this deal that they came up with, and you know, this one paragraph just jumped out at me. It says, the other step forward came from Senators Patrick Leahy and Susan Collins, who said they had come up with an agreement with the NRA to beef up restrictions on gun trafficking. So they're negotiating. The NRA is a negotiating partner on this legislation.
Right. Yeah, the NRA, who should have no say whatsoever, at least not in an official capacity. They can lobby like anybody else.
Yeah.
And besides that, given what you know about the NRA, what's indisputable about them as a group, what you've seen over and over again, you can't argue with. Given all of that, anything that they agree to is not going to be good.
Yeah, sure.
It just isn't.
Well, what are the reasons?
Because they won't agree to anything. They won't give an inch. So therefore, any compromise that they're supposedly making is not a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And one of the reasons why the assault weapons ban, the first one from 1994, was not as successful as it could have been was because the NRA carved out all of these loopholes in the legislation that made it basically toothless. I mean, they basically made it an inconsequential piece of legislation. Sure. Where you could get all kinds of different little things that redefined what an assault weapon was, basically making it still, you know, reasonable and capable of buying an assault weapon.
Oh, yes. Yeah, slightly on the same subject, but kind of tangential to it. Please tell me that somewhere on your Facebook feed, because as soon as it happened, I just waited. And sure enough, like one of the dumbest people who I happen to be quote-unquote friends with on Facebook immediately started in on this. The knife attack in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
With like the – yeah, you know, as soon as it happened, I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for these – you know, the asshole who thinks he's really clever. And also, should we regulate knives now? I think we should regulate knives. Sure enough, one of my friends started up with that. And I wanted so bad to argue, but he is so dumb.
Yeah.
That I know that it's a waste. And it will make, I mean, I get your, again, as always, your point about let other people outside of that, you know, of that person who you're trying to convince, let them hear you and hear your argument. But it's like, I have to weigh that against how much I hate migraines. Because it would bother me so much listening to him try to come back and think. And it just, but I mean, as soon as I saw the knife attack, it's the first thing I thought.
Yeah. Well, you have a couple of responses to that. First response is, yeah, sure, let's regulate knives too. Yeah. No one should be walking around with a replica Klingon Batleth, for God's sake. But yeah, you want to regulate bladed weapons? Let's talk. The other thing is, all of those people would have been dead if that had been an assault weapons massacre. Right. They would have been dead instead of just wounded. It was the same thing with the Chinese knife massacres that were going on right around Sandy Hook. There was one right after Sandy Hook, I think. And everyone pointed to that. You know. But those people would have been all dead instead of merely just suffering from stab wounds.
Right.
I'm sure if you ask those victims, given the choice, they would much rather be alive and stabbed than dead. And riddled with bullets.
Yep.
So the other thing...
Yeah, I mean, as soon as it happened, I'm just like, oh, okay, I can't wait. I can't wait for the idiot contingent on Facebook to start up.
Yeah. Well, here's going back to this gun control legislation. The measure would also make it easier for people with concealed carry permits in one state to transport their weapons through another state where they would otherwise be breaking the law, such as in New York. This is part of this compromise. So you have a concealed carry permit in one of these backwoods red states, and you can take it into states like New York and things like that. Take your weapon. Mm-hmm. So basically, it basically makes concealed carry the law of the land. You get a concealed carry permit anywhere where it's legal, and you just bring it anywhere else. This is your gun control legislation, America.
Right. And remember, let's leave it up to the states to make decisions.
Leave it up to the states.
Every state, you know, they get to make their own decisions.
And
except
it
when it comes to this.
And ultimately, this thing is never going to pass the House of Representatives. I mean, they had to water it down like hell to get it to what we can only assume at this point is going to pass through the Senate, because the Rand Paul, Ted Cruz faction has decided that they're not going to filibuster. So it'll eventually pass the Senate, but it's never going to pass the House. So all of this is just sort of a symbolic exercise, which is extraordinarily frustrating to me and to most people who would like to see some sort of real gun control legislation occur. But even if it does pass, it's like, oh, you have a concealed carry permit? Bring your firearm anywhere. Anywhere you want to go. You want to, you know, cross the border and walk into a school or walk into a movie theater with your firearm? Go for it.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, criminal-friendly places. That's what I love those gun lobbying groups that use that term.
Yeah.
You know, instead of gun safety zone around schools, it's criminal friendly. It's criminal friendly area. Like, let me tell you, I went round and round with this Virginia Citizens Defense League a few years ago.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was laughing at was their website. They've got, you know, criminal friendly businesses, which are places where they, you know, they don't allow you to bring in guns. And a bunch of them were banks. And I'm like, yeah, why would a bank possibly want you bringing a gun in?
Oh, man.
Jackass.
This is, I mean, the entire thing just gets dumber and dumber. It's remarkable, in fact, how same-sex marriage is increasing in popularity. But this gun control legislation is becoming more and more difficult. It's like you can chart the bell curve from before Sandy Hook until after Sandy Hook, how just the interest has just disintegrated.
Right. Well, you know, it's our attention span now. We have to be reminded again and again. The problem is it never sticks. I mean, no matter how horrible, and I mean, that really what happened at Sandy Hook is, it's such an interesting test case for what our attention spans are in our sort of new media, our hyper-connected media age, which is nothing will stick.
Mm-hmm. Nothing, especially on this.
I mean, that's the most horrific thing I've ever imagined. Like I said, that affected me. I was at Ground Zero and at the armory at 25th and Lex, where the families were sent after 9/11. I was there. And that, for some reason, didn't have the impact on me that Sandy Hook did.
Ted Nugent is popping off again. We're going to talk about right after this. Oh, hey, it's Earth Day coming up this month, and Bubble Genius has Earth Day soap. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius about that there Earth Day soap.
Hey, happy Earth Day! Learn how you can fight global climate change. Remember, you've got the whole world in your hands.
I know, isn't it fabulous? All refreshing and bubbly down to its soapy, spicy core.
What are you talking about? I want to tell you how to help protect our environment from global warming and...
I know, which is why I just got this awesome global warming soap from Bubble Genius.
Soap? So you're going to wash away global climate change?
Well, kinda. This soap is the coolest. It's called You've Got the Whole World in Your Hands, and it's a 3D rendering of the Earth, all in soap. First the land melts away, then the oceans disappear, and then you're left with a cinnamony core.
But how does that actually help anything?
Well, it's handmade in the U.S. with a pure vegetable base and ingredient sources close to home as possible, which supports local economies and reduces fossil fuel consumption. Plus, it's packaged in recyclable materials. And these Bubble Geniuses give a third of their profit on this soap to people fighting global warming. So, yeah, I guess I am washing away global climate change.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize how much we really do have the whole world in our hands.
You bet your bubbles we do.
You've got the whole world in your hands with You've Got the Whole World in Your Hands Global Warming Soap, only from the mad minds at Bubble Genius.
No polar bears were harmed in the making of the soap. Soap is not to scale.
BubbleGenius.com.
shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yeah, please do. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the show. You can download all the shows, and you can review the shows, and you can rate them with little five-star system they have on iTunes. We'd appreciate it. Also, the BubbleGenius.com promo code is Bob and Chez. So when you go to check out, after you buy all your soap from Bubble Genius, you get 15% off if you type in Bob and Chez when you go to check out. And if you don't know how to spell it, then I don't know what to tell you. So Ted Nugent was on one of these Wingnut radio shows recently. It was what was the name of the show? The Cam Edwards Show. There are literally thousands of them. I think there's like 1,400 different right-wing radio shows. I mean, there's a ton of them.
The Doucheman Show.
Yeah, and they all kind of revolve like planetoids around Rush Limbaugh. It's basically the Rush
Limbaugh. He does have his own gravitational pull.
Well, you have to imagine, and we've talked about this before, so I'll review quite briefly. All the morning show DJs, who used to be very popular back when people would listen to FM radio, they all decided, well, hell, we can't make a living doing this anymore, so we're going to become conservatives and get talk shows.
Mancow.
And that's precisely what they all did.
Perfect example.
Yeah, Mancow's a great example. I think Mark Levin was also one of those guys.
Yeah, Mancow was a terrible, awful shock jock, a really, a hacky, crappy radio host.
Yeah, and so was Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck was like a morning zoo DJ. And so they all decided, well, we can't get work in this anymore because no one's having the morning show, morning zoo DJs in the morning anymore because of music and because of budget cuts and because of the internet and yada, yada, yada. So now we're just going to become conservatives. It's a career choice. It's not anything ideological. Maybe with some of them it is, just mildly, but they're all just playing characters on the radio. And that includes this guy, Cam Edwards. So Edwards had Ted Nugent on his show the other day. And so Ted Nugent, they were talking about gun control, and Ted Nugent repeated what he said about, ending up in jail. Mm-hmm. So Nugent says, that's why I said almost a year ago, Cam, and people recoiled in horror. And I know it caught a lot of my friends off guard when I said, if this freedom hater, if this enemy of America becomes president again, I'll either be dead or in jail. And remember when I was on stage with you, Cam Edwards, and some people chuckled? And Edwards says, yep. Nugent continues to say, so we find humor in a disastrous statement from a guy who is on the front lines. This guy dodged the draft.
That's what I mean. My favorite thing about where you're going with this isn't just that he's popping off again about, his gun metaphors, but the fact that it's so hyper masculine for a guy who's a little turd, right? Who shoots at things that can't fire back, who dodged the draft, who would be the first one to piss his pants if he were in a real combat situation.
Yeah. Precisely. And so he always, he dresses in camouflage, dresses up in the military garb, and then speaks in all these military terms.
Like all these military metaphors that he's throwing out there.
Yeah.
Stuff that he learned from playing, freaking Call of Duty.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, the upshot here is that he's going off again about shooting people. He says to Cam Edwards, but when I kick in the door to the enemy's camp, would you help me?
Exactly. Who talks like that?
Would you help me shoot somebody? Just help me clear the room.
Clear the room.
Right.
Right.
Ted Nugent.
Again. Ted Nugent of the SWAT team.
And then he qualifies himself. He says, and again, that's a metaphor, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not recommending shooting anybody.
You know what? I think someone should shoot Ted Nugent. And I'm not really recommending that somebody do it. I just think that somebody should shoot Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
You know why? Because the only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Sure.
So please, Ted Nugent is a bad guy with far too many guns. Just shoot him.
But you're being metaphorical, right?
I'm being completely metaphorical. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I want to. I mean, I hope Bob that you and you'll help me. You know, you'll help. You'll be my air support.
I got your back, man.
You got my back. You got my six.
Semper Fi.
You got my six.
We're a band of brothers out there in the foxholes, in the trenches.
In the the trenches that I live in L.A.
We're out there in the sh.
Yep.
Fighting the VC. The VC.
Right, we need to come up with, like, we need to find a way to like, you know, all these crazy gun nuts, you know, they always ascribe when you're in war, they call it, you know, Charlie or we need, from now on, Teddy is the enemy.
Teddy.
Well, we're going to go take down Teddy. I'm telling you, man.
Hey, look.
When I was at that NRA meeting, it was me against Teddy.
That's so great. That's so great.
Jag off.
But you think if Nugent was serious about making a case against new gun control laws as a method of preventing more gun massacres, he might stop making gun massacre metaphors that involve Ted Nugent himself as the shooter?
It's just pandering. You know, he knows which side his bread is buttered on. He knows who his fans are. And right. His fans are dumb sh**.
Yeah.
His fans are dumbass rednecks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they eat that crap up. Because otherwise, I mean, if he wasn't feeding them this pablum, this nonsense, where would he be right now? What would Ted Nugent be? Ted Nugent hasn't released a record anybody gives a shit about in, what, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
More than that?
Yeah,
I was into Ted Nugent when I was in elementary school.
No one gave a shit about him in the 70s. I mean, yeah. He had one song. It was like Cat Scratch Fever. And then he did a horrible album with the Damn Yankees, that super group from 1989.
Right. Yeah, that was the last time I heard him being, you know, for lack of a better term, culturally relevant. Nobody gives a crap about Ted Nugent.
But much like the Morning Zoo DJs, who all became conservative talk show hosts, that's precisely what Ted Nugent did. He saw it as a career opportunity
to do this crap. Exactly.
Hey, one last break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yep, we're back. Yeah, I think it's a bad idea to be constantly making gun massacre metaphors.
You know,
there's no price
to pay for it. There's only an upside.
Right.
He's going to make money. There's no price to pay for it, because if by some chance some asshole goes out and shoots up a school tomorrow morning and says, yeah, man, I got Ted's back. You know, I'm helping Ted clear the room.
Yeah.
You know what? There's not going to be an apology from him. No. Nobody's going to back down. Nobody's going to put their tail between their legs. It's just going to go on unabated, because that's nothing. These people are absolutely shameless.
The other side of that coin is that they're cowards. This is the only reason.
Oh, they're total cowards. Yeah. Ted Nugent is an absolute coward. He's a fucking coward.
The only reason they're able to make these statements, and they use these militaristic terms, and they dress up in the camouflage, the whole uniform, basically. It's like there's like a chicken hawk mentality about these guys, where they love dressing up like military guys. But when the time actually came for them to enter the draft, they sent the poor sucker who lived next door in their place, basically.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm not saying... Look, if there was a draft, I'm too old for it now, I guess. But if there had been a draft, let's say, during the first Gulf War, and we had been summoned up, I guess I'd have no choice but to have gone. But, you know, in terms of volunteering for the military, I would never do that. I would never do that.
Oh, yeah, no. And you know what? I respect people who do. And I'm the first one to say it. It's like, you know, I play a crap load of Call of Duty. You know, dear God, you know, and Modern Warfare you got all the, you name it.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at my video games right now across the room. You know, all these, I play all of them and I love them. They're great. Not for a second do I think that's somehow, you know, that I'm some kind of badass.
Yeah.
I own a gun and I don't think it makes me a badass.
I mean, there's just no chance in hell I would ever survive that. I mean, just I've seen the movies. I've seen the documentaries. I would never survive boot camp. I would just crumble. I would. And I'm in pretty good shape. I would still crumble. I just couldn't deal with it. And then the whole idea of, you know, volunteering, knowing that there's at least one war going on, would just be insane. At the same time, though, I mean, I think I'm pretty consistent in my opposition to war. You know, I'm not saying, let's go to war and, hey, you got my back as we fight through the shit against the VC or whatever metaphors that Ted Nugent uses, right, and then say, oh, hell no, I'm not going to war. Are you kidding me? I'm a coward.
Yeah. I'm Oscar Mike.
I just like pretending like I like to pretend that I'm going to war.
Right. Again, you know, I play these video games and they're a blast and I'm the first one to say it. You know what they are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at no point do I think that somehow that makes me someone who that's one of the arguments I always have about, like, you know, David Sirota, because David Sirota has this patriarchal liberal thing where he's like, he has to protect the kids because he knows that, you know, video games are going to make them want to go to war. And that's how the government gets you. You know, which, you know, there is an argument to be made. I know that, you know, a lot of soldiers, when they go overseas, you know, they do play these video games. And I'm sure that, to, you know, if you're a freaking idiot, maybe you play Call of Duty and that makes you think, I want to go fight. But for the most part, no, it doesn't have that effect on you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I know that it doesn't. It's never had that effect on me. At no point have I thought, oh, I can't wait to go get my ass shot off.
Yeah, I see this a lot on the conservative side, where they love to pretend to be in the army. They love to pretend to be military guys.
Did you ever see The Smartest Guys in the Room, the documentary about Enron? Excellent.
Yeah.
Jeff Skilling used to take his upper managers out for, like, paintball games. Honestly, I actually read a story recently about Phil Griffin from MSNBC, who does the same thing. It's this we're at war with, you know, I run MSNBC and we're at war with Fox. So we're going to be trained by a Navy SEAL, which is what they do. Phil Griffin actually has his guys, you know, we're going to go through SEER training. We're going to waterboard you. Because this is, you know, this is war. You're going to learn. It's like, you know what? No. You go to an air-conditioned freaking office in the middle of Midtown Manhattan, and you've got hot and cold running water on every floor and little freaking Nespresso coffee machines. You're not at war. Knock it off.
I used to go. They used to have a laser tag place in Pennsylvania where I used to live.
Love that.
And you go in there with a bunch of kids. You know, you take your kid to a birthday party at the laser tag place. But there were all these other guys who were like our age, who were like in like 30 at the time, who were like pretending it was military, like it was some sort of elite tactical training going on with the laser guns.
Yeah, I have a friend who does the airsoft stuff.
Yeah,
you know, which is basically it's like the weapons are amazing. I mean, they look real; they really do. They have the same weight, and they fire like these little sort of soft plastic BBs. And, you know, and they go and they do the same sort of paintball type stuff. You know, there's this somewhere out in the desert around here. There's like a fake, you know, Middle Eastern bombed out town where these guys shoot at each other. And, you know, and I mean, they have a great time. And my friend has wanted me to go. And I actually wouldn't mind going. It'd be fun. You know, I mean, I accept that. Oh, it is what it is. It's
well, yeah,
that's around.
But
it is fun because there I know that he knows people who are like, yeah, man, we're going to light, you know, all right, go ahead, light them up. I'm sorry, light what up?
Yeah.
What are you lighting up exactly?
That's the distinction. The distinction is you can go and have fun. You can even go play laser tag or paintball or whatever. But, you know, it's how you approach it. If you go there and you think suddenly that you're in the military, like it's some sort of, like you could totally be in the shit. Like you could totally kick some ass in the deserts of Fallujah or whatever. That's where it gets like in the realms of chicken hawkery.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just please. Oh, come on with the ridiculous.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Natural Born Killers when Robert Downey Jr. is that ham-fisted, obnoxious, pompous Australian reporter gives the speech about how I was there when the shit went down in Grenada.
Oh my God! And I just realized too, I'm going to be bleeping the hell out of this show.
I did notice that.
We've been just swearing like sailors throughout this entire show, and I'm not sure that I've marked every single one of them.
Well, you'll figure it out.
I think I'm going to have to listen to the whole show, which I rarely ever do. But I think I've marked all of them. I think I've got all of them. But I hope I did. Otherwise, apologies to WPWC We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. if any obscenities go out over the air. Anyway, so I want to get to, before the show ends, I want to get to this Mitch McConnell, Ashley Judd, Mother Jones tape. And I love that
Mother Jones is like the, you know, like the hidden audio tape publication now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's actually great to see real investigative reporting happening with actual, like, evidence presented as part of the reporting. But in case you didn't know, Mother Jones and David Korn received another clandestinely recorded audio recording, you know, like the 47% tape. But this one was of Mitch McConnell and Mitch McConnell staff members in a high-level meeting at McConnell reelection headquarters in Kentucky. And so I think it was, no, maybe it was Kentucky. I'm not sure if it was Kentucky. But anyway, it was the reelection headquarters. They were opening them up, and then they had this high-end meeting back in February where they discussed opposition research against then-potential candidate challenger Ashley Judd. And so they're discussing different ways that they're going to take on the campaign and to attack Ashley Judd. And one of the ways was they were going to exploit the fact that she had had a situation with depression several years ago. And they were going to exploit her as being, quote unquote, emotionally unstable. Really classy. So rather than now confronting the aftermath of this and responding to all of these really, really classless, ridiculous, dishonorable tactics that they were going to employ against Ashley Judd, they've now taken to fundraising on this as being Mother Jones and the liberal establishment using Watergate-style tactics, Nixonian tactics, bugging the headquarters. Which is completely absurd, knowing that it was probably just a staff member recording, you know, like a disgruntled staffer who really doesn't like McConnell, recording the meeting on a smartphone.
Right.
It's really all it was. So, but the irony here to me, and this is the crux of this, this is the centerpiece of this aftermath of the Mother Jones piece, is that they were going to exploit someone who is, in their terms, emotionally unstable. But their reaction then is that this is some sort of conspiracy. Yeah. This is sort of
they're the ones who are crazy.
Yeah. They're acting like a bunch of paranoid schizophrenics, thinking that liberals are eavesdropping on all of their conversations, you know, using bugging technology. And they even
that is beautiful. That really is.
I mean, they used the term wiretapping in their fundraising email. Wiretapping wiretapping?
That involves wires.
Involves wires, right. And as far as I know, there was no phone conversation happening in any of this. Plus, Jesse Benton, who's the campaign manager for the McConnell reelection campaign, referred to it as Gestapo tactics. He said, this is Gestapo kind of scare tactics, and we're not going to stand for it. And now these fiscal conservatives, who really, really care about taxpayer money going towards frivolous government expenditures, have now tasked the FBI with investigating this quote-unquote wiretapping conspiracy.
You know, again, the level of hypocrisy from them is it makes your head hurt.
It really, really does.
It's completely, it's just everything about it. Everything about that story highlights all of that hypocrisy that we've seen so much.
Well, and they were going to exploit this woman's disease for political gain.
Of course they were.
This is your modern Republican Party. Not only your modern Republican Party, but the minority leader in the United States Senate was going to put his name to this. They were going to exploit her depression. And then he was going to come on with his albino sleestack face at the end of that ad and say, I'm Mitch McConnell, and I approve this message. And then get the slee stack noise there.
His head withdraws back into its shell.
Yeah, it's difficult to know whether or not McConnell looks more like a turtle or more look like a slee stack.
Phil Graham used to look like a turtle.
Seriously, he is the weirdest looking guy in all of American government.
You know what? It's almost as if some, some gypsy or something touched him on the face and said that his looks were going to resemble his personality.
Right.
Like from then on, his looks would be representative of his heart.
But here we go, getting all ad hominem against Mitch McConnell. Yeah, too bad.
Screw that.
Too bad. Guy who was going to exploit his opponent's mental illness for political gain. Yeah, we've got to tap dance around him. Yeah.
I hate the ad hominem crap. Because you know what? After a while, it's not a fallacy. No. If someone does the same sort of things over and over again, you do get to actually extrapolate and say, look, the reason why I'm not going to listen to anything this person has to say, or why I think this person's argument is probably crap, is because most of their other arguments have been crap. That's not ad hominem.
Sure.
That's effective police work. That's profiling.
So look, where is the press now? Where is the press to ask Mitch McConnell, sir, why so paranoid? I mean, you were going to attack someone for being mentally unstable, or emotionally unstable, I think is the exact word from the recording.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about emotionally unstable, about calling Ashley Judd emotionally unstable. I'm sure it's rare. I try so hard these days to, when I attack people, attack them for stuff. Like, I know this is the reason why I will sometimes let dog whistles go, because I want proof that they're saying what I think they're saying. But there's just no denying the fact that him accusing Ashley Judd of being emotionally unstable is a sort of, it's a woman thing. Yeah. You know, she's emotionally unstable.
Right.
You know, there's a definite sort of sexist tone in that.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Which plays, and they wouldn't do it if it didn't play really, really well in Kentucky.
Of course.
You know, they were going to do the whole thing with the, you know, Hollywood liberal.
Yeah. The crazy woman from Hollywood.
Yeah. That crazy woman. Yeah.
Yeah, the crazy woman from Hollywood.
Followed by, I'm Mitch McConnell and I approve this message. Right. Mitch, paranoid schizophrenic Mitch McConnell. Why so paranoid, sir? What's your problem? Do you have issues?
Well, you know what? I'd respect him more if he came right out and he said, look, you know what? I'm only pretending to be paranoid. You know, I'm doing it because I'm a cynical asshole who will say or do anything to get votes and to keep my cushy government job. She really is crazy.
Right. I wrote in the Daily Banter today, according to conservatives, everything is a conspiracy. Everything.
Of course it is.
Everything. Falsified birth certificates, Benghazi weapons trafficking, Al-Qaeda, Acorn election rigging, firearms confiscation, terrorist sleeper cells in the White House.
Yeah, it's all, everything is a conspiracy.
Yeah. Black liberation theology, fascist communism.
And they play this up, and it never stops. It never stops.
Sharia law, you know, replacing the Constitution. Yeah,
yeah. And this is why we're living in the era where Alex Jones is a political force that you know can be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And it's not because anything he says is especially smart. It's because he's given credibility by one of our two major political parties.
Yeah.
That not only adopt these insane beliefs, but sort of, you know, they sort of propagate that. They're like, yeah, well, you know what? It's okay when you think this way, because everybody really is out to get you.
It's the mainstreaming of Alex Jones. It really is.
Yeah.
And we saw this with the various members of the House of Representatives repeating Alex Jones's talking points on gun control with regards to anti-depression medication. By the way, what does this say about this whole Mitch McConnell thing? What does this say about the sudden Republican concern with mental illness? Yeah, they're really concerned. They're going to exploit it for political gain. That's how concerned they are with it. Good Lord.
Ashley Judd should, if she hadn't dropped out, I'd say she should just go buy a gun.
And shoot Ted Nugent.
Right. And shoot Ted Nugent. Yeah. And then suddenly, you know, maybe they'd give a crap about her mental illness.
Right. We're being metaphorical, by the way.
We are. Totally metaphorical.
Hey, we've got more politics coming up on the after party, because there's a bunch of stuff we didn't get to on the show today. We're going to talk about a little bit of climate crisis stuff. Margaret Thatcher, Joe Barton had a great thing. And by great, I mean ridiculous and stupid. Congressman said something about the Great Flood and Noah with regards to climate change. That should be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about some Rand Paul racism material. And we might even talk about North Korea a little bit. We haven't really gotten into North Korea on the show, but we'll talk about that maybe on the after party. Throw in that maybe, because I have no idea what we're going to talk about ultimately. That'll be coming up tomorrow, Friday. Or no, not Friday anymore. It's Thursday. It'll be Thursdays from now on. Thursday at noon Eastern. Make sure to subscribe on the website. Just go to the thing and do the thing with the PayPal thing.
Thank you.
And sign up. It's $6 a month. Cancel at any time. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. We'll see you next week. Bye.